Sir, for a moment, back in the book of Exodus, after the 10th plague, Pharaoh finally relents. Bitter with humiliation and beaten, he tells Moses and Aaron to be gone already. I let your people go. Foreseeing that Pharaoh would have a change in heart, God instructs Moses to take the people on the longer route to keep a step ahead of the pursuing Egyptians. And it proved to be a wise strategy as the Israelites safely crossed the Red Sea, leaving Pharaoh, his soldiers, and horses pursuing to drown in the sea. And we now, in this week's Torah portion, Ekev, find Moses 40 years later preparing the Israelites to cross into the Promised Land. It seems rather cruel, after 400 years of slavery in Egypt, that the bedraggled Israelites had to schlep through the wilderness for 40 years. In what otherwise would have taken only a couple of weeks. Moses, who knows the days of his life are numbered, imparts his final words to give the Israelites strength, the strength they will need to prepare and cross the Jordan River. The first thing Moses does is to explain, why so long? And he says, remember the long way the Lord your God has made you to travel in the wilderness these past 40 years. It was to test you by hardships, to learn what was in your hearts, whether or not you would keep God's commandment. God subjected you to the hardship of hunger, and then gave you commandments. And then, following that, gave you manna to eat. Why? In order to teach you that man does not live by bread alone, but may live on anything that comes forth from the mouth of God. Therefore, keep the commandments of the Lord your God. Walk in God's ways. God puts the Israelites through a 40-year training camp, preparing them to survive and thrive in Israel and across the world and throughout the generations to our time. Yet, think about the specific hardships for a moment. What were the Israelites and what are we to learn from the hardships? The first test was the hardship of hunger. There would be no reason to choose this as a test if God and our biblical authors weren't certain that this would be a reality in the future. This would not have been chosen as a test if there wasn't a specific lesson for us to learn from it. Well, that specific answer is given, Lo al halechem levado yichye ha'adam. Man does not live by bread alone. This is a phrase known around the world, yes, by biblical scholars and those with no knowledge at all of Bible. So I'm curious. Most of you here tonight in the sanctuary and in your homes, have heard this phrase, man does not live by bread alone. So if you would, don't get stuck on man, the Hebrew translation of Adam. You can comfortably, with my permission, insert human beings. Human beings do not live by bread alone. So what the, and this is not a rhetorical question, what does that mean to you? Your interpretation, human beings do not live by bread alone. Don't be bashful, there are no wrong answers. I'm waiting. Really, what does it mean to anybody? Man does not live, human beings don't live by bread alone. So say it again. Say that.
Being dependent on one thing for survival, whether it's social media, whether it's a certain kind of, we're talking about food, whether it's a relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. So we don't live by this alone. There is something else. Yeah. Laura. Beautiful, beautiful. Anything else? Not just bread alone? Appreciate both of those insights. Anything else? Going once. Yeah, Joan. It's more than just our physical bodies. We have spirituality as well. Joanne. Community. All of the above. So first of all, you are great channels. Yes, I think we can agree that, and actually, beautifully summed up by Rabbi Mark Saperstein, that the provision of basic physical needs, the satiation of hunger represented by bread is not all there is to life. There is a spiritual dimension that makes human beings what we are. I love this idea, which is supported in our morning prayers. We thank God for the miracle of our physical beings, our bodies, if we're blessed that carry us through the days and years of our lives. And immediately following the prayer for our bodies is the prayer praising God for our souls, pure souls that carry the very breath of God, physical and spiritual, side by side. Yet the 40-year journey was much more than distinguishing the physical and the spiritual. It was about the wilderness experience itself. Could this experience provide a foundation for faith and trust in God that could withstand any hardships? Of course, this is the theological question for the ages. What reinforces a strong foundation of faith, one that won't crumble when our world is rocked in one way or another, natural disasters or the corrosive side of humanity that does rear its ugly head? Well, the answer I would suggest is actually found in next week's Torah portion. Rabbi Steele, you'll forgive me if I'm taking any wind out of your sail. But within just a few verses, Moses, channeling words that flow from the mouth of God, says, and stick with me for a moment here. Moses says, "There shall be no needy among you. If, however, there is a needy person among you, do not harden your heart or close your hand against your kinsman." And then there will never cease to be needy ones in your land, which is why I command you, open your hand to the poor and the needy kinsmen in your land. So the Torah at once offers us a vision of the world as it should be, no needy. One that will imagine there's not a needy person on all the earth. But Judaism does not get stuck in a utopian world. It moves us closer to the world as it is. Perhaps we'll come across such a needy person in our own community. And if so, with an understanding of human nature, God implores us to not harden our hearts or close our hands, then preparing us for the moment of our lost innocence, recognizing that there will never cease to be needy ones, the hungry, the underserved, the unhoused, those without adequate health care and education, all the disparities that we can point to in our own community, and it's a reality around the world. The foundation of a faith life is built on a partnership. And now back to this week. Moses reminds the people, reminds us, what God did for us when we were hungry. God provided sustenance in the form of manna that fell from the sky. The Israelites had never experienced such nourishment. Yet there it was, from the benevolent hand of God. And then God commands us to walk in God's ways. Well, how, you might ask, can we, mere mortals, walk in God's way? Look at the model God sets before us. Gifts from heaven to the emancipated slaves. Walk in God's way, we imitate God. When we do this, and everyone in our sanctuary tonight and with us from your homes, you've experienced it. When we choose to open our hearts and our hands to others, a family, neighbors, the strangers in our midst, it's a human exchange that brings together the physical and the spiritual nourishment in our lives. It's where heaven and earth meet. It's a faith rooted in the interconnected partnership of all God's creation, being humble servants walking in God's ways. Someday, perhaps there will be no needy, no disenfranchised, all cared for, all seen and treated with dignity, all the earth singing in unison. But there's work to be done. Olam Chesed Yibaneh. Together, we build a world of kindness and love.